the first six seals, which we looked at in first class this morning, have taken us from the time of the writing of the book of Revelation, AD 96, to the time of Constantine. And in AD 312, Constantine defeated Maxentius, the pagan Roman emperor, at the Battle of Milvian Bridge, just outside Rome, and he became emperor in Rome. There were other powers in the east which he had to overcome, but by AD 324, he defeated all the opposition and he ruled as sole emperor in the Roman Empire. So that takes us to Revelation 8, verse 1. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was a silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. Now, the time periods in Revelation are really key to understanding it. We saw that quote from a futurist exposition last night. If we ignore the time periods, it's possible to fit some of these details into history. Well, we can't ignore the time periods. We've got to look at them. We've got to understand them. And we will find that they fit perfectly with history. So let's tackle this one. About half an hour. Jesus said there are 12 hours in a day. And that's the way we understand things. We're in very long days at the moment. As I checked yesterday, the sun was due to rise at 4:44 in the morning. So our days are more than 12 hours long at the moment. But biblically, there are 12 hours in a day. And 1 hour, being 12th, is a month, which is 30 days. So 12 hours in a day, 12 months in a year. So day for a year, 1 hour is a month, which is 30 days. Half an hour is therefore 15 days. Day for a year, that's 15 years. There was a silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. So it's not exactly half an hour, it's about half an hour. And there was peace in the Roman Empire from AD 324, when Constantine was in sole charge, until AD 337, when he died. And that's 14 years. 14 years is about 15 years, about half an hour. So there's the Roman Empire. It was divided into three parts at this time. I wonder if you noticed as we read through Revelation 12, how many times you find the phrase "the third part." I reckon 9 times in Revelation chapter 8. And the Roman Empire was divided into three. There was Western Rome, and the capital of Western Rome was, of course, Rome. There was Eastern Rome, the capital was Constantinople, because Constantine didn't like ruling from Rome. He decided there was a better place. So he moved east to the city which used to be called Byzantium. He renamed it Constantinople, he rebuilt and enlarged it, and that was his capital. And emperors ruled from Constantinople for a very long time, as we will see when we get to chapter 9. So that's two divisions. And then there was North Africa, whose capital was Carthage. And that was ruled by fairly independent kings, but it was part of the Roman Empire. So, for that period of 14 years, there was peace. But then things started to deteriorate. Verse 2 of chapter 8, I saw seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. So now we find angels at work. We've seen, well, we haven't actually seen because we haven't looked at it, but there are angels in chapter 8, the first three verses, and they are now going to work in chapter 8. And we find the earth and the sea are going to be hurt through these trumpets. So chapter 8, verse 3, and another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer, and there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of saints upon the golden altar which was before God. And the smoke of the incense which came with the prayers of the saints ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. Why were the saints praying? Well, they were praying because they were being persecuted. Because Constantine, having declared freedom of worship to the Christians, then proceeded through the Council of Nicaea in AD 325 to tell the Christians what they could worship. And the Council of Nicaea decided that Jesus Christ and God were of the same substance. They hadn't quite got to a trinity at this stage, but they certainly got to a duality. And Jesus was, in effect, God. And there was a man called Arius, who lived in Egypt, who said, no, that's wrong. The Bible says Jesus is the Son of God, that he is the begotten Son of God. He cannot be equal to the Father. And the Bible doesn't teach that Jesus is equal to the Father. And Arius' view was pronounced heresy by the church. The church believed that Jesus was God as much as the Father is God. And so Arius, who said that Jesus is the begotten Son of God, was a heretic. And that's going to come out in Revelation chapter 8. So the Christian Roman Empire was persecuting true believers, just as the pagan Roman Empire had. And God is about to deliver them. So verse 5, the angel took the censer and filled it with fire at the altar and cast it into the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. Not a great earthquake like the one we saw in chapter 6, but it is an earthquake. There's going to be a great overthrow of ruling powers. So the Christian Roman Empire, which was set up by Constantine, is about to be overthrown. It happened in stages, it took over 1,000 years, but as we'll see, it happened exactly in accordance with the prophecy. So, chapter 8, verse 7, the first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of trees was burnt up, and all the green grass was burnt up. So, third part, in Revelation 8 and 9, third part occurs 13 times. Roman Empire, as you can see, is divided into three parts. And each one in turn is going to be subject to the wrath of God because they had persecuted the saints. So, first of all, Western Rome comes under judgment of trumpets 1 to 4, North Africa, trumpet 5, and Eastern Rome, trumpet 6. That's how the judgments of God are poured out. We start in Western Rome, and then North Africa, and finally Eastern Rome. And the last thing to fall is Constantinople. So there's a map of Europe about the time of Hadrian, 125 AD, and we're going to see where these powers came from. So the first trumpet is Alaric and the Visigoths. Alaric means king of all. And he originated up here in Northern Europe, and he and his people were driven west by the Huns, and they settled in the Roman Empire, and Alaric was actually in the Roman army and doing very well as an officer of the Roman army. But a new emperor came to power, and Alaric asked for a pay rise for himself and his troops. And the emperor said, no, and we don't like you anyway, so he threw him out. So the Goths made Alaric their king, and he marched on Rome. And Alaric was an Arian Christian. He believed that Christ was the begotten Son of God. So he's actually waging a holy war against the Roman Empire. And Gibbon, the historian, records that on the way to Rome, he said he felt a secret and preternatural impulse which directed and compelled his march to the gates of Rome, because God was using him, just as God used Constantine, and as we shall see, God used Napoleon and Nelson to work out his purpose. God used this man, Alaric. They're not accidents of history. And men knew that they were working out the purpose of God. So Alaric came to Rome, he besieged the city three times in 408, 409, and 410, and he took it. And for 6 days, the Goths cruelly sacked Rome. It's the first time Rome had been conquered by an enemy for 800 years. So there's the time period, AD 408 to 410. Alaric was at the gates of Rome and defeated it. But shortly afterwards, in 410, he died, his forces dispersed, and shattered Rome tried to rebuild itself. So we come to now the second trumpet. Verse 8 of chapter 8, the second angel sounded, And it was as a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. The third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. So why this symbology of a great mountain cast into the sea, and creatures in the sea dying, and ships being destroyed? What's going on here? Great mountain, burning with fire, cast into the sea. Well, the next power that appeared was Genseric and the Vandals. And they came from up in the region of Norway and Sweden, and they came south and they settled in Spain. And in North Africa, over in Carthage, was a Roman general called Boniface. And people were rebelling against his rule, and he hadn't got the power to put this rebellion down. And he knew that Genseric and his men were over there, just over the sea in Spain. And so he sent a message to Genseric and said, come and help me. It was a very bad move, because Genseric didn't come and help Boniface. He came and took over. And he defeated the Romans in Carthage and the area of North Africa. And again, Genseric was an Arian Christian, and he was even more vehement with his Arian Christianity than Alaric had. So he fasted and he prayed, and he always carried a Bible with him when he went into battle. And he allied with the Donatists, who were people who had been persecuted because they didn't believe in the Trinity and had fled to North Africa. And he ended the persecution of the Donatists, and he either exiled or killed all the Catholic priests that he could find. And he confiscated all the assets of rich Catholics in North Africa and reduced them to poverty. He came to Carthage, and the people were at the races in the Hippodrome, so he just walked into the city and took over. Didn't even have to fight to take Carthage. And for the next 35 years, he and his people vandalized the Roman Empire. It's where the word Vandal comes from, Genseric and the Vandals. And they were people of the sea. They were in effect pirates. And they looted the coasts of the Eastern and Western Roman Empire. In 455 AD, the Emperor of Rome was killed, and his widow, who wanted to rule, begged Genseric for help. So Genseric and his men sailed across the sea to Rome, and they plundered Rome for 14 days. And obviously the Romans didn't like this, so in 460, they sent a fleet of 300 galleys against Genseric's naval forces. And Genseric defeated them. So the Romans said, what are we going to do? So they spent 3 years building 1,113 warships. It cost the Roman economy a huge amount. The inflation must have been enormous, because all the money was going into the naval dockyards to build these ships. And they sailed across the Mediterranean to attack Genseric. And this is how the purpose of God worked out. They sent a message to Genseric and said, we've come, we've got this huge fleet. If you fight us, we're going to defeat you, so you might as well surrender now. And Genseric said, can you give me a few days to think about it? And in those few days, he prepared fireships. And then they set sail toward where the Roman ships were. And Gibbon records in his history that Genseric's pilot, bear in mind Genseric was 70 years old at this time and still leading his troops in the battle. Genseric's pilot on his flagship said to him, what course shall I steer? And Genseric said, leave the determination of the course to the winds. They will transport us to the guilty coasts, to the people whose inhabitants have provoked the divine justice. And the wind blew them along the Mediterranean coast to where the Romans were. And then the easterly breeze changed to an onshore wind. So Genseric lit his fireships, and it sent them in on the breeze. AD 428 to AD 477. AD 455, he sacked Rome. And then he sent in his fire ships and he burnt all of those 1,100 Roman galleys. A great mountain cast into the sea. A third of the ships were destroyed, and the Roman Empire was reduced to even greater poverty than it had been before. That blast of the second trumpet lasted a long time, and it was still sounding when the third trumpet was blown. But just notice the locations of the second and third trumpets. The second was sounded, and a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and a third part of the sea became blood. We're going to find that language again this evening in Revelation 16. And verse 10, the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And we're going to the third angel sounds, and this great star fell from heaven. Verse 11, the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died because of the waters, because they were made bitter. And that introduces this man, whom the Romans called Flagellum Dii. How's your Latin? Anyone any ideas what that might mean? Richard shaking his head. Flagellum Dii is the scourge of God. So if you flagellate someone, you beat them with a whip or a scourge. And the Romans call Attila the Hun the scourge of God. So these are the Roman Trinitarians, and they believed that God was against them. And so this man came, Attila the Hun. You could tell when the Huns were around, they smelt dreadful apparently. They never got off their horses. They fought on their horses, and they ate on their horses. They virtually never got off their horses, and they never washed. So Attila the Hun came from fairly far in the east, and they were driven west by the Mongols, and so they moved over into Europe and they went to Rome. So Attila the Hun devastated the Balkan regions, which were the source of all Europe's rivers, and that's why it says in verse 10 that this star fell upon the third part of the rivers and the fountains of waters. It's that territory in the middle of Europe where all the great rivers have their sources. And then he invaded Gaul, and he was another Arian Christian. He massacred the priests in every city that he took. Judgment on the Catholic Church. In AD 451, he was defeated by the Romans, but he regrouped, he invaded, and he wrecked northern Italy. It was said that the grass never grew again on the spot where his horse had trod. So the symbology there is a great star from heaven, a meteorite flashing across the sky, great impact on the earth. The impact of Attila was brief, but it was devastating to Rome. And then it talks about wormwood. The Greek word for wormwood is absinthos. It's a herb which is bitter and makes the water undrinkable. And the name comes from the river Absinthe, and that's the very region from which the Huns came. So for that time period, they devastated the Roman Empire. And by the time Attila the Hun and his Huns had finished, the Roman Empire was tottering. So verse 12, the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the men was smitten, the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars. So as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. Now we've seen that language in chapter 6. Chapter 6, verse 12, and the sun became black as the sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell to the earth. and that was the overthrow of all the rulership of the pagan Roman Empire. And God uses the same language in Revelation 8 verse 12 of the overthrow of all the rulership of the Christian Roman Empire. And so the fourth trumpet came. The Ostrogoths, they came again from northern Europe and they came down to Rome. First of all, Odoacer in 476 defeated the last Roman emperor, Romulus Augustus, and took over, and then he was defeated in turn by Theodoric in AD 493. And he established the Gothic kingdom and the end of the Western Roman Empire. But what about the time period? The first 12, the third part of the moon and the third part of the stars, and the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. Now this one's a bit more complicated than the half an hour, but we'll have a go. There's the extent of the Gothic Empire. They ruled over all of Italy and part of southern Europe. So, fourth trumpet. 1 hour is a month, as we've seen, it's 30 days. So a third of the day is 4 hours, which is 120 days or 120 years. A third of the night is the same. So you've got a total of 240 years of total eclipse. No sun, no moon. In AD 560, the Roman emperor in Constantinople, Justinian, issued a decree in which he degraded Rome to a second-rate city. He declared the capital in the west was Ravenna, not Rome, and Italy was a province of the Eastern Empire. So the Western Empire has gone completely. There's no emperor, there's no Rome as a capital. And that lasted for 240 years, because 240 years after AD 560 is AD 800. And in AD 800, Charlemagne was crowned emperor of the Holy Roman Emperor. And the whole thing was revived. So 560 marks the political end of the Christian Roman Empire, but 240 years later, it all came back again. So we'll move on to Charlemagne later. So what was the next great event that happened after the fall of the Western Roman Empire? So we've now got Eastern Rome and North Africa, and we're going to move on now to trumpet number 5. So what was the next great event that happened? Well, it was the rise of Islam in the Arab lands. Revelation chapter 9 and verse 3. This star fell from heaven to the earth, and to him, verse 1, was given the key of the bottomless pit. And verse 3, there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. So it's locusts and scorpions that come forth in the symbology. The locust is in the Hebrew arbe, which is where the word Arab comes from, and Arbi is the desert, Arabah. So out of that territory, out of the Arabian desert, came the Saracens. And they pulled early artillery weapons behind them, which were called scorpions. They didn't fire cannonballs, we'll come to them later. They fired what was called Saracen fire, which was a burning substance. Nobody knows the formula, they kept it secret, but I guess it was a bit like napalm. It stuck to people and burned them. And does this reference the locusts? So there on the top of the map, you've got the territory of the desert locusts. That's the area over which locusts plague the land. And below, you've got the territory of the Saracens. Very, very similar. Right, now read Revelation chapter 9, verse 4. It was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree. but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. So the religion of Islam was founded, as I guess we all know, by Muhammad. And when Muhammad died, he was succeeded by Abu Bakr, who was a close friend of his and had been with him through all his circumstances. And it was Abu Bakr who sent forth the Saracen army to fight against the Romans. And this is what he said to them. And just compare those words on the screen with Revelation 9 verse 4. I don't imagine Abu Bakr had ever read Revelation 9 verse 4, but he was an instrument in the hand of God. So don't kill women and children, cut down palm trees and burn fields of corn or fruit trees. Don't damage cattle unless you need to eat them. But you will find another sort of people that belong to the synagogue of Satan, who have shaven crowns, what the Catholics call the tonsure, where they shave the top of the head. Be sure you cleave their skulls and give them no quarter until they either turn Mohammedans or pay tribute. So they were given three choices: either be killed, become a Muslim, or pay tribute. And so verse 5, they were tormented by them for 5 months. So here's the detail of the fifth trumpet. Star fell from heaven, Muhammad was driven from Mecca to Medina, and there he started his new religion of Islam. He was given a key. He gained power through his religion of Islam. And they came out of the pit, out of the Arabian deserts. And that's the shaft, as we'll see in a minute on maps, which gave them access to the abyss. And the abyss is the Catholic Empire. If you have a look at chapter 11 and verse 7, I'm not going to go into the detail of chapter 11, but just pick up this detail. When they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overthrow them and kill them. And that's the Catholic power in Europe making war against those who believe the Bible. The bottomless pit is Europe, and Britain's now out of it. So Muhammad was given the key, or the Muslims were given the key, to get access to the abyss, the shaft, but not into Europe itself. So they were given the choice: convert, pay tribute, or die. And then we read in verse 7, the shapes of the horse locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle, and on their heads were, as it were, crowns of gold, and their faces were the faces of men, and they had hair as the hair of women. So they had yellow turbans, they were all bearded, unlike the Catholics who were clean shaven, and they had long hair under their turbans. So the symbology fits precisely. They had tails like scorpions, so they towed this scorpion artillery, firing Saracen fire into battle. And they were around, it says, for 5 months. Verse 5. They should be tormented 5 months. And 5 months of the year is the period of locust activity. They appear from May onwards for a period of 5 months. So if we work out the arithmetic, there's a 5 months in verse 5, and there's another 5 months in verse 10. So you add those together, and you get a time period of 300 days equals 300 years. And that goes from 636, when the Muslims defeated the Persians, to 936, when the Caliph of Baghdad was deposed. So they had power for that period of 300 years, as scripture said they would. And they had a king over them, verse 11. It's the only period in history where the Arabs, the Muslims, have been united under a certain single ruler, the Caliph in Baghdad. You look at the Arab nations now, they have no head. They are all disparate, different nations with their own policies. Islam is divided into Shiite and Sunni, and they don't have an authority at the top. They did then. And in verse 11 we read that the name is in the Hebrew tongue Abaddon, but in the Greek hath his name Apollyon, the destroyer. And by the early 8th century AD, they'd conquered all of North Africa and were moving through Spain and Portugal into Europe. So we're going to have a look in a minute at the Battle of Tours. But they came out of the Arabian desert and they went all along North Africa. They crossed over the Pillars of Hercules, the Straits of Gibraltar, and they settled in Spain. And in Spain they became known as the Moors. And there they stopped for a while, and then they decided they would conquer Europe. So they moved north, and they got as far north in France as Tours in 732. And there was a battle between the Moors, the Islamists, and the Emperor of the French, Charles Martel, Charles the Hammer. And it's the first recorded battle in history where an army which only had infantry, foot soldiers, defeated an army which had cavalry. And Charles Martel had trained his troops, and he knew exactly how he was going to fight this battle. So he dug his troops in on the edge of a wood, which limited the activity of the horsemen of the Turks. And he said to them, stay there, don't go out onto the plain and try and attack the Turks. Eventually, they will come against you. Sorry, not Turks, Saracens, Turks next. They will come against you. So for 7 days, Charles Martel's troops stayed in their positions and waited. And eventually, the Saracens attacked, and Charles Martel's troops defeated them, drove them back over the Pyrenees, and they were no longer trying to conquer Europe. So that's trumpet five, the Saracens. And the whole of North Africa, that third of the Roman Empire, has gone. And that only leaves now the Eastern Roman Empire centered in Constantinople. So, Revelation 9, verse 13, the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a great voice from the four horns of the golden altar which was before God, saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year, for to slay the third part of men. And there's that phrase, third part again. Two-thirds of the Roman Empire have gone. There's only the eastern third left. So the four angels are loose. And there were four waves of Muslims, Islamists, who came against the Eastern Roman Empire. First of all, there were the Seljuks under Alparslan from 1062. Just to sort of put it in context of our history, that's 4 years before the Battle of Hastings, to 1272. And then came the Mongols, Genghis Khan, we'll look at him in a minute. And then the Tatars under Timur or Tamerlane, Timur the Lame. And then finally, the Ottoman Turks. So first of all, the Seljuks, and they ruled that area on the map that's in dark green, and you can see they're pushing towards Constantinople, but they can't get there because they were attacked from the rear by Genghis Khan, and they had to turn away from Constantinople. They couldn't take it. So on the 27th of April 1062, two brothers, Togrul Beg and Kadri Beg, came to Baghdad, and they effectively deposed the Caliph, the ruler of Islam. Togrul Beg married the Caliph's daughter, which put him in the position of power, and he became the head of Islam, and his nephew Alparslan, who's that little statue there at the bottom right of the screen, started the war against the Eastern Roman Empire. He defeated the Roman Emperor of Manzikert in 1071, but he could not take Constantinople. And then came Genghis Khan, who ruled over the largest area of the earth's surface that had ever been ruled over by one man, and who said, I am invested with the divine power to subdue and extirpate the nations. So here's another man who believed he was fulfilling the purpose of God. And he was succeeded by Tamerlane, who said, by my arm has the Almighty been pleased to subdue the kingdoms. And they considerably reduced the power of the Eastern Roman Empire. And so we come to the final phase, the fourth angel, the Ottoman Turks. So the Turkish Sultan threatened Constantinople in 1402, but Tamerlane came from the rear and defeated him. And then in 1451, Mehmet Mehmet II, who was called the Great Destroyer, became Sultan. How old do you think he was when he became Sultan? He was 19. How many 19-year-olds have we got in the room? Fancy ruling the Turkish Empire? Well, he did. And he said, I'm going to take that city, Constantinople. And his pashas, his viziers said, can't do it, kid. Those walls are 100 feet high, 30 feet thick. People have been trying for 1,000 years to take Constantinople. He said, I'm going to do it. It took him 2 years. He got it. So there was a Catholic bellmaker called Urban. And those of you who are booked on Bible school for next year, Brother Stephen Hornhart's due to come over from Australia, God willing. If he does this section of Revelation, you will really enjoy it. But this Catholic bellmaker called Urban heard about a German monk who had invented a black powder called Schwarzpudra, which if you lit it, went woof. So he got hold of some of this black powder and he put it in one of his inverted bells and he lit it and it went off. And he thought about it, and so instead of a bell, he cast a tube, a brass tube. And he put this Schwarz powder in the bottom of the brass tube, and then rolled a stone down the tube, and then lit it through a touch hole. And instead of going woof, it went bang, and the stone shot out of the mouth of the tube and disappeared. He'd invented the cannon. So he went to the Roman Emperor in Constantinople with his plans and his drawings, and tried to get an interview with the emperor. Said, I've invented this weapon which will help you to win the war against the Turks. And the emperor wasn't interested. No, he said, never work, won't help, go away. Well, he wanted to use his invention, so he went to the Sultan, and he said, showed the Sultan what he had done and his drawings, and the Sultan said, right, I want a demonstration, build me one. So he cast a cannon, and he loaded it, and he took aim at a Greek ship there in Bosphorus, and he fired his cannon, and the Greek ship disappeared under the water. And the Sultan said, you've got a job. Take those walls down. So he built enormous cannon. They weighed 20 tons. They needed hundreds of men and oxen to move them. And they fired a cannonball weighing half a ton. And so they battered the walls of Constantinople. And they got to the point where the emperor said, tomorrow we're going to take the city. They'd been battering the walls, they'd been trying to climb the walls, but there were angels at work. He was given the key, and during the night, the Turkish guards found a Greek who had come out of the city, and he was stripping the bodies of the slain of anything that was of value. And they said to him, how did you get out of the city? And he said, give me a bag of gold and I'll show you. So they gave him a bag of gold and he showed them an old door that had been bricked up. But they had these poor people who lived in the inside of the city against the wall had prized the bricks away, just enough for a man to crawl out. And so they would come out at night and seek spoil. So on the morning, the Sultan sent 50 of his best troops through the hole in the wall. And they started to fight against the Greeks. And they were then between the two walls of the city. And the commander of the Greek forces had said, under no circumstances do you open the inner gates. If the Turks get over the outer wall, we'll fight them in the space between the walls. that don't open the inner gates. But one of these 50 Turks shot the commander of the Greek forces and wounded him in the neck, and he said, "Get me into the inner city." So they opened the gates, just as the Turks came over the wall and the Turks took the city. So there's a picture of some cannon similar to those that were used in the defeat of Constantinople. But then we come in verse 15 of chapter 9 to the time period. The four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year for to slay the third part of men. And we've got the start date, 27th of April 1062, when Toghrul Beg became the head of Islam. So let's work through it. There's the arithmetic. 1 hour, 12th of a day, is a month. 1 day is a year. 1 month, 30 days, is 30 years. And 1 year, 360 days, is 360 years. And that all adds up to 391 years and 1 month. And from the 27th of April 1062, when Toghrul Beg became the head of Islam and started the war against the Eastern Roman Empire, to the fall of Constantinople on the 29th of May 1453, is 391 years and 1 month. That's the accuracy of Bible prophecy. It works out time and time again, and it confirms that our understanding of the events that portrayed in symbol in these chapters in Revelation is correct. So, what have we seen? We've seen that in chapter 6, God destroyed the pagan Roman Empire. We've seen that in chapter 8, God destroyed the Western Roman Empire. And we've seen in chapter 9 that he destroyed the empire in North Africa and the whole of the Eastern Roman Empire. And tonight we're going to see that God would destroy the Holy Roman Empire through chapter 16. And we're now in the final phase, where we've got the Roman beast in Europe following the Lisbon Treaty, which I mentioned last night, which gives the Catholics power to influence European legislation. An American writer wrote, "There is now no democracy in Europe. A beast stalks the continent." I don't know whether he'd read Revelation, but he's absolutely right with his symbology. So the testimony of the book of Revelation is it's the record in history of God's work, and it gives us the confidence that the beast system is going to be destroyed. And that's what Revelation 17 and 18 talks about. And the saints are going to be manifesting glory, and the kingdom of God is going to be established upon the earth, which is what we're going to look at tomorrow.